we want that it should be a goal-oriented, a destination-oriented journey, rather than just living, just day-to-day living, eating, drinking, sleeping, and the same routine next day again. We don't want to live like that. We want to have a purpose, a goal. And that goal is to be first understood. And then the methods to arrive at that, they have to be known and followed. All these things are very important. And the Lord has shown to Arjuna that, look, the goal is to realize this true, unchanging nature of ours. The real self is to be experienced. We all know the existence of self, I am. Everybody says I am. But what that I is, we are very much confused about. Many times, or most of the times, we feel I to be this body. But as we see that the body keeps on changing, it cannot be the true unchanging I. The mind too keeps on changing. So, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord gave a very beautiful, very important, very scientific criterion to decide what is true self and what is just an appearance. How to decide that? The criterion is, whatever changes is not self. Whatever does not change, that alone is the self. What a beautiful criterion. What an important and very practical criterion to decide what is self and what is not self. To separate, we must have a criterion, is it not? It is for anything, when you want to select something, you need a criterion by which to select. So, for example, those who want to join the military, they have certain criteria there, that if those who meet this criteria, then they can join the military as combatants. So, because the work requires those things, a good physical health, some particular requirements of education and all that, and they are important for getting selected there. So a criterion is there, or a criteria, many of these things are there, placed for selection. So now we have to select what is the self and what is not self. Like as parts of our body, we may say that, well, my hair is I. But then we see that it falls off, and then I don't see that it is I. I just put it into trash. It is not considered I. So we know that it changes, it is not I. And that becomes applicable to the whole body. I am beginning from here because we can see that it is really not I. Now apply the same principle to the whole body. Body is not I, because it changes. Similarly, mind undergoes the change. All the time it is changing. I sometimes back gave you the nice story, the example of one of our Swamis. We were traveling together in the plane, and when the attendant came to ask you that, would you like something to drink? And then he said, no, I'm fine. But then I said, oh, give me some juice, something. Then he thought he also should take, seeing my example. So he asked her, can I change my mind? Since it is my mind, I think I can change it, is it not? And she was also nice. She also gave some nice reply. That yes, you can change your mind, but because I have not made up my mind till now, I can do what you are asking me to do. So it is, the point is that it is something that keeps on changing. Our thoughts today do not remain the thoughts tomorrow. It is many times this question is asked that for a spiritual seeker this is a nagging problem. That some days you feel very nice, very spiritual, very elevated. The mind does not run after anything. You feel very peaceful. But there are some other days when the mind is so ruffled. It just does not stay steady at any higher thought. It wants to just rush after certain very mundane or not very good things. It just behaves worse than animals. It gets violent thoughts, and sometimes it gets very serene, nice thoughts, and keeps on changing. So, since it is changing, it is not I. So thus we, this criterion has been given. Now in the light of that criterion, now in this particular verse that we were studying last time, and we have to judge our actions also. And this very important part about the directing our actions to the goal is being discussed since the middle of the second chapter, then in third chapter, and in the fourth chapter too. And that is to work without aspiring for the results thereof. You keep on working, do your works, and just be calm. Don't run after getting the results of those. Because the results will come automatically. They are products of work and not of your aspirations. So just do your work and be calm. The peace comes thereby. Then also what happens with that is your understanding about what you are starts becoming more and more refined. Then the thoughts about, no, let me teach a lesson to that fellow, let me bring about a change in the whole world. It is all those thoughts then start appearing to one as silly, childish thoughts. Just as children, we get so many ideas, and after we grow them, we outgrow those ideas also, and look at them as how silly I used to be those days. So similarly, when we outgrow this idea that I am this body and this mind, we come to a level of that calmness, where we are not deluded by these ephemeral goals of life. We then look at our true nature. In the light of that, then we all see these as moving pictures. We do not become inactive thereby. Please remember, outwardly our actions then become much less prejudiced, much more focused. We clearly then can see what is right and what is not right in a much better way than when our minds are clouded by a very narrow and often very selfish understanding. So, therefore, Lord has said in the past three verses that we had been seeing, that it is very difficult to get the right understanding of what is work and what is not work. And one has to therefore understand these three things. that what is the right activity, what is wrong activity, and what is inactivity. Then the 18th verse that we discussed a little bit last time, and decided that since the time was over, we will continue the discussion today. It is this: Karmani akarmaya pashed akarmani chakarmaya sabuddhiman manushyeshu sayukta krishna karma krit. He who sees inaction in action and action in inaction is wise amongst men. He is poised and a performer of all actions. Now, inactivity in activity and activity in inactivity would appear to be seeing contradictory, seeing that which is not right. We gave the example that if I look in Emily as Joan, then it won't be the right understanding. It won't be called that I am seeing the right thing. I should see Emily as Emily and Joan as Joan. If I confuse, then that is not the right understanding. But see, look at what Lord is telling here. That which is inactivity, see it as activity. And that which is activity, see it as inactivity. All opposite. How is it? The reason given is that we have already created a confusion, and therefore Lord says, learn to see the things in the right way. You are right now, what you are calling as activity and what is really acting is not the correct understanding. It is the story of a monkey and an old lady. Is very interesting. I had told it earlier also that a monkey saw an old lady picking these grains, you know, she was throwing out these small stones in the grain. And then the monkey wanted the grain. So the monkey came to the lady and said that, well, oh Grammy, you are so nice. It seems that you are finding it so difficult to see those small pebbles separate from the grain. Because your eyesight is... She said, oh yes, because of old age, I can't see now properly, you know. Monkey took out a spect, glasses, and said, take these glasses. I have got this pair of glasses, put them on, and then you will be able to see clearly those small stones separate from the grain, and then you will be able to pick them out. The ladies then took the glasses and started seeing very clearly. But the monkey said that, well, everything has a price, you see. I am giving you these glasses and you should give me something in return for that. And I am not asking much. You are going to throw away those stones anyway. Just give me those stones. Any problem with that? The lady immediately agreed, anyway I was going to throw it, you can take the stones. And then, after the agreement, as the monkey gave the specs, they were very special specs. They just reversed things. So those stones were seen as grains, and the grain was seen as stone. So after, she said, well, a lot of stones in this, you take away these stones. The monkey happily took away the stone and also the specks. And then after that, the lady sees all stones are left with her. So we also are deluded like that. That which is not acting, we are seeing as acting, and that which is not acting we are seeing as acting. And therefore, we have to properly correct our roles. You may ask, why do you think that whatever is action, I am calling it inaction, and reverse, why do you think that I am deluded? I may be right, Lord, you may be wrong. And you see, majority is on my side. There may be a few like you, but really speaking, majority is on my side. Don't you follow the rules of democracy? They say in a democracy, it is not the head that counts, but it is the heads that count. So that is important, you see. So we have so many people on my side. How do you say that we are deluded? The answer to that is that look at all those majority. What are they having as the result of their delusion? All the suffering and confusion. Have they come to the nature of truth? Have they realized the nature of truth? Even after searching it for thousands and thousands of years in this way, they have not come to the truth by that. Because their basic premise is wrong. They have taken something that is not real as real, and on that premise they are building the edifice of their science. And so, even though it appears that what I am telling is not the right thing, if you penetratively try to look at it, then you will see the truth of it, you can understand it, and then experience it. You can rationally understand it, but it is not enough. That rational understanding needs to be converted into tangible, practical experience. Lord says, you can do it. He says that, look, you feel that I am acting. Everybody says that when I am running, I am in motion, I am active. And when you are just sitting and feeling that you are doing nothing, or when you are lying on the bed, you feel that I am inactive. And when you are engaged in, say, some work, say, some accounts work, or some teaching work, or some such cleaning work, whatever work, you feel that you are working. And after your day's work is over, you may feel that now let me relax, and you sit in the chair and feel you are not doing anything. He says that is not correct. See penetratively. When you feel that you are working, what is working? Your hands, feet, this, that, they are in motion. You are not that, is it not? You are not that. It is just the hands, feet, body, it is in motion. You are not in motion. In the screen, in the movie, lot of motion and commotion may be there, but the screen doesn't move at all. So, are you working? No, you are not working. And similarly, when you have the feeling that I have done the work, now you are sitting in the in your easy chair and you feel that I am not doing anything, I am relaxing. Friend, that relaxing is also in a mundane sense a work. You are doing the work of relaxing. As long as there is this ego, the mind is in motion. So although the body is still, the mind is doing lot of work. So you are not really gone beyond work. It is the, as long as the ego is working, it is in motion. And therefore, just by keeping the body still, don't think that you are not active. It is the mind that is still active. So, understand what is activity and what is inactivity. I am telling you the truth that in the seeming activity, this self, this true self is inactive. And what seemingly appears to be inactivity, still, because there is the ego, the ignorance, ignorance generates this idea of a separate I. I am so and so. That is the meaning of ego here. That I am so and so. That makes you desire for so many things. Whether those desires are actually being put into the physical work at that time or not, the mind is continuously leaping towards them. So work is going on. There is a beautiful incident in the life of Buddha that illustrates this. There was a terrible robber, highway robber, and he had killed many people and snatched away their wealth. So he was famous by the name Angulimala, the one who puts the garland of fingers. And whomsoever he would kill, he would cut a finger of that fellow and make a garland. And he had a long garland of so many people killed. So, because that was his great deed, everybody wants to, you know, let people know of the great deeds that we have done. Like in the military, they have those medals and all. People like others to see that, you know, say, I am a great man. I have done such wonderful things. These are my badges. Some time back, a small child came to show me, you know, Swami, you know, I have become Air Force cadet, and so I have got, you know, those badges. I want to show you the badges. So he came with the badge. Now this robber had these badges, you know, that so many badges that everybody killed. So when Buddha wanted to go on that path, everybody told, don't go on that, that fellow is there, he is likely to kill you. So beware, don't, better not go. Buddha said, no, well, what is he going to do, let me see. And as he was going, this Angulimala, this dacoit, approached him and with his sword in the hand was going to kill Venerable Buddha. But with that calm influence of Buddha, he could not proceed. With his hand raised with sword in it, he became still as statue. Buddha was walking, and while walking, he says to this robber, well, dear, I am still and you are walking. And this was a perplexing statement. The dacoit said, well, you see, because of your mysterious power, I have become statue-like, motionless. And still, and you are going, walking, and still you are, why you are saying this reverse, contradictory statement? You should be saying that I am still, this robber is still, and you are walking, that should be your statement. Why this false statement? And Buddha gave the explanation there. My being is steadfast in the wisdom of Nirvana. And therefore, even though the body is walking, I am still. And although your body is still, your mind is full of the desires and the violence that comes as the product of it. The desires breed violence, friends. It is because of that you are full of violence. And so you are in motion, your mind is leaping all the time. And thus you are in motion, I am still. So this is the idea, that in spite of our seeming stillness, we are, because of that sense of a separate I. Yes, look at this, how many desires are continuously rising on the surface of our mind. They are never steady. They don't let the mind steady at any time. And Arjuna will ask this question to Krishna later on, that my mind is so unsteady, so difficult to keep it steady. It is like trying to hold the wind in your fist. Just as you cannot try to hold the wind, mind seems to be worse than that. How to keep that under check? And it is true. The mind is, because it is full of desires, every desire, what does the desire do? It propels an activity. Think of our activities, how they are propelled. Propulsion is required, you know, for every motion, like your car has that propeller engine. Engine has to be there for the car to make it run. So what makes our activity go on? The desires are the propellers. Otherwise you may be just sitting in your place. A desire comes, I need to eat ice cream. And then you get up from your place, go into the car where there is ice cream parlor, you run to that and then eat it. All the activity goes on because, well, I have a desire. I have a desire to go and see different places. Otherwise I am fine, but I get the desire that let me go and see some aquarium or something. And then, otherwise I am nice, sitting nicely, relaxed. But then I start looking for the avenues to what, how to do that. Then purchase a plane ticket, apply for the vacation. You have to ask for vacation from the boss. And so then you have to show a lot of humility to the boss, you know. Otherwise you can walk there in the, your school, this thing upright. But when you are seeking some favor, then you have to apply like that. So you have all those things you do. Why? Because the desire is there. The desire is making us do all these things. Otherwise, see, no desire, then you don't need to do any particular thing. You may do many things then also, but that is an expression of calmness and control. The desires, I want to do this immediately, the mind will become active and then it will force the body to act. Why is it so difficult for us to sit in meditation? It is, if you are doing something that is very dear to your heart and your mind has propelled you to do that, time just passes on. That seeing the ball game, hours and hours people keep on watching the idiot box, nothing. It is... and time just flies. Sit for meditation for 5 minutes. It is very difficult for 5 minutes sitting in meditation. People think that, has the 5 minutes not over till now? 5 minutes appear to be a very big time because there are these desires. They propel the body. They want the body to come up. I have seen in the time of when the guided meditation or such things are going on, invariably people get some that why not that they are having cough or anything at that. If you have cough, that is a different matter. But this thing comes not because of that. It is the person may be perfectly all right otherwise, but that internal that sense, it wants to make the body move, that being still cannot be tolerated. So something, a sneezing comes, or a coughing comes, or you start, you know, making your itching comes, you know. Otherwise, if you are watching the ball game, you won't feel this the desire to scratch. But when you are sitting for meditation, suddenly from nowhere an itching sensation will come. And why it is so? It is because of this, that the mind has a lot of disturbance and it is making the body, it is working on the body. So it keeps on making it vibrate. Sitting steady is so difficult. So, Lord says, even if therefore you are feeling relaxed, there is the activity. See that the mind is in action. So, if you see this, if you see this truth, then the next line is very interesting. That person is the most intelligent person amongst human beings. That person is sa buddhiman manushyeshu. Amongst human beings, such persons can be called as intelligent. There is intelligence of solving many difficult mathematical problems, or see what is going on in the somewhere on the sun or in some other star. Yes, that is one kind of intelligence. But really penetrative intelligence is that which sees that what is active and what is not active. What is appearance and what is real. What changes and what is unchanging. And see what a great illumination it brings. What is unchanging in the midst of all changes. And when we learn to focus on that, then nothing more remains to be known, nothing more remains to be achieved. And in that sense, that last para says that that person is yuktaha, the real yogi, the one who sees this unchanging self in the midst of the changing phenomena. That person is yogi. That person has achieved the purpose of this yoga. That is experiencing the truth. So, if we want to become yogi, then this is the secret of it. That see what is changing and what is not changing. And thus knowing that your real nature is that which is not changing. What now have you achieved by that? Some people may ask that, yes, Triveni, she is a yogi, you know, she used to teach us yoga. So what does I achieve by doing this yoga, Triveni? What do you achieve? Everything in life. So, it is that part, Sa Krishna Karmakrit. That person has performed all that needed to be done in life. All that was needed to be done in life has been done by this person. All works are performed by this person. Now, why so? Again, let us understand. A very beautiful statement. That person has done all the works that are needed to be done in life. What is the meaning of work? Work is a purposeful activity is work. And something, doing something is not work, you know. If I just keep on moving my hands on my head, and then if I ask Vishwanath, I will keep on doing this, how much payment will you give me for this great work I will be doing? $20 an hour. You just laugh at that. This is no work at all. What does it achieve? It does not achieve anything. You can keep on doing it for the whole life. I won't pay you a pie. I will not even stand your side. Nobody will be paying you. It is not what purpose it serves. What purpose it ultimately serves in life? Let us ask this question to all the actions that we are doing, friends. Let us ask, what is the purpose that it is serving in my life? Ask. Those actions alone are really work that lead us to the ultimate goal of life. Only those actions are work. Others are useless activity. It is not doing us any good. We do not get anything out of it. We can look back at our various actions in life. What did we get out of those? All of the or that will be classed as didn't do me any good except those actions which gave us the knowledge of this truth and the experience of it. Only those actions are work. Others are useless activities. It is useless activities. So that who has achieved this purpose of the work, now what remains to be done by that person? Is there anything that remains to be done by that person? The goal has been achieved. So that person has performed all the works. I still remember that scene and I had spoken of it. It happened when I was a college student. And one Swami had come to give a talk in my school. And he gave a talk on the goal of life. And after the talk, a question was asked by one brilliant student that, suppose we take it for granted that after all this spiritual practice and so forth, the student wasn't very respectful of all those things. So he kept on using some derogatory words also. Suppose the fellow does all that what you call yoga and this and that and all that. That person realizes what you are saying as the true self and becomes kind of Superman. What next? What next? What next? The Swami replied, I ask you what next remains. For everything else that you do, there will always be this question, what next? Because there are still to go. When you are walking on a circular path, you reach nowhere. There is always to go, still to go. The journey never ends. We are in ignorance on such path, circular path. If we penetratively observe, we can see that. Did we not come into the same situations again and again? How do you know that you were on a circular path? You see the same buildings again, the same shops again. Then you know that you are not going anywhere. You are on the same road. So, see how many times we have come on the same thing and still we are so dumb, we don't see that we are not going anywhere. We feel that maybe after I cross this building, then I will reach the goal. We feel like that many times, that let me get this university degree and then I will be, it will be all nice, done. And no, again the same thing. And what next? What next? What next? It is here that you get the solution. That when you realize your true nature, now you have become everything. You see that the whole universe is your expression. There is nothing more to be done. No desires are left. You are everything. What will you desire for? You know now that bliss is your nature. No particular thing can bring happiness or satisfaction to you. You are now beyond all actions. There, now the question gets the answer. It is only in this state that one gets the final true answer to this question, that what next? This question is completely, totally answered here, that from this there is no next. Just as after climbing Everest, now you, what next peak are you going to climb? There is no next peak now. You have climbed the highest peak on the earth. You cannot now climb anything here. So after this achievement, there is nothing more to achieve. The Upanishads are replete with these statements showing that there is nothing further, because you have become one with truth. There is no subject-object separation now. For all other activities, there is I, the doer. That thing is to be done. There is always separation. And thus, you always have something further to go for. Here, that subject-object separation has disappeared. And thus, you now don't have to get joy. You have become joy. You have become joy. You put something you want to make sweet, you put sugar in it, that to make it sweet. What are you going to sweeten the sugar with? You cannot add more sugar to it. It is not possible. If you want to take a bath, you take water and dip yourself in it. In what the ocean is going to take bath? There is no place where ocean can take bath. It is the water itself. It is. It doesn't need any further bathing tub, you see. It is. It cannot bathe anywhere. It is like that. So, that person therefore has fulfilled every action, done every activity. Whatever was needed to be done has been done by this person. All the works are performed by this person. So, therefore this great statement that this person is Krishna Karmakrit, has finished all works of life, and thus comes the rest. Otherwise there is no rest. Unless you finish your works, there is no rest. Even if you are, for example, the person is sitting with coffee in the morning, is not at rest, I have to go to my work now, looks at the watch, otherwise I will be late, let me run. All those things, they are there because there is still work to be finished. No rest. Not only rest when you are old, till you one becomes old. And are you having rest now? No, still no rest. Because there are so many desires. Not that one becomes old means it will be restful life. No restful life even if you become old. And just because you have not finished your activities, you have to take birth again. Go through the cycle. Again an opportunity is there. Finish your works in the next life, in the next life. You cannot escape. Finish the work and then there will be rest. Till the work is finished, no rest at all. So this is a very important teaching that if we finish our works here, means when we know the Self, then the work is finished. Then rest. Till then, go on working, finish it. Don't waste your time in doing something useless. Do your work. It is, your work has to be finished. Like the students, sometimes they sit with the book in front of them for hours. No study is done because the mind is running all around, you know. Otherwise half an hour is a good study time, you know. One can study a lot in half an hour. But otherwise you keep the book in front of you, move your eyes over it, no study gets done. Similarly, if we keep on doing something that is irrelevant, work will not get done. Work will get done only when we are doing this yoga, becoming one with our true nature, realizing our true nature. That work alone will bring the fulfillment in life. So, in the next verse, it will be told that therefore the person who works without any selfish motive, a training has to be imparted to oneself to work in that fashion. That work, don't say that now, so I will not go to work at all, because these works will create problem. You are then committing a much bigger mistake. It is like saying that, you know, that some time if you drink polluted water, the water that was not properly purified, then you get sick. And you say, because I drank that water, I got sick. Now, to avoid sickness, I will not drink water at all. Okay, you will soon die by thirst. You will die of thirst. Not drinking water is not the solution. What is the solution, Triveni? Purify the water and drink it, is it not? That is the solution. Purify the water and drink it. So purify the actions of this impurity of desires and then drink it. That will cure our life. So that is the great teaching we will be seeing in the next few verses. Any questions? We will conclude with the regular closing prayers.